Welcome to the Accelerating Operational Performance Podcast. I'm Greg Schinkel, President of Unique Training and Development and Frontline Leadership Systems. And our goals in the podcast are always the same: help you advance in your professional career, do so with less stress, get better results through your team and through some of the projects that you're working on, and just learn from some of the people that we interview to pick up tips that can help you get more out of your life and fulfill your potential. Today, I'm excited because I have a guest in studio, Edwin Holder, or Ed Holder. And anyone in the southwestern Ontario area of Canada and the province of Ontario would definitely know the name Ed Holder because he served as mayor of the City of London. But going back, I first got to know Ed through the Rotary Club of London, where we were both members. And at that point, he was president of an insurance brokerage in London, Ontario. So let me properly introduce Ed. I want to make sure that I get the highlights here. Ed Holder is a retired Canadian politician and business leader who served as the 64th mayor of London, Ontario from 2018 to 2022. Before his political career, Holder was a notable figure in the insurance industry. He founded Ontario West Insurance in 1981. He later merged it with Stevenson and Hunt Insurance Brokers and served as their president from 1991 to 2008. In 2008, he decides to take a bit of a turn and get into politics. He successfully ran for office and became the MP, or Member of Parliament, for London West. He held that seat for 7 years and was appointed Minister of State for Science and Technology in 2014 under the Prime Minister Stephen Harper. He then returned to municipal politics, winning London's mayoral election in 2018. Holder announced his retirement from politics in May 2022. He is married to entrepreneur Judith Holder, who owns Razzle Dazzle Cupcakes, among other businesses, Right Send a Basket. He also does his own consulting business, and I'm going to try to get into all that in today's AOP episode. Welcome to the podcast, Ed.
Greg, a pleasure. Thank you.
So, Ed, you know, one of the reasons why I wanted to, by the way, I should point out that the time that you and I actually would interact would be at a Rotary meeting, or one time I think I was on the same flight as you coming back from Toronto late at night, and you were returning from Ottawa at the time because you were in the national government of Canada. So I was just fascinated that you've had all these different twists and turns. And I think it would help, even though I just highlighted them in your intro, walk me through kind of some of those nooks and crannies of your career as you moved from insurance in the 1980s to being, you know, MP and then mayor.
Well, it would sound silly, but let me say that I, having been born at a young age, and why that matters is that I was born having a Cape Breton mother and a dad from Holderville, New Brunswick. Can't make that up. and after the Second World War, they were in Cape Breton and Glace Bay, and then ultimately moved to Upper Canada, to Toronto, where I was born. And I'm very proud of those Cape Breton and New Brunswick roots. Yeah. By the way, we say Cape Breton, not Nova Scotia, exactly. Just for any of the unwashed out there. and you know, it's interesting, we may get into this, but the mom was always with six kids and I was the fifth. The interesting thing is that they followed my mom's mom from Cape Breton to Upper Canada. Uh-huh. And so in my grandmother's house, which yeah. was basically a semi-detached house at the corner of Broadview and Girard in Toronto, if mm-hmm. anyone knows where that is, my grandparents were in one bedroom, my aunt and uncle and two kids were in the second, and our family was in the third. Oh, I'm the fifth kid,
yeah,
and I was born in that bedroom.
Wow.
So crowded house.
Hey, and by the way, I just wanted to interject just to say that, you know, we deal with a lot of manufacturing and operations companies, and the saying is that if you can hire a farm kid or someone from the East Coast, you've got somebody who's almost bred to have a good work ethic because things weren't necessarily easy. And I'm not sure if that's why there's a lot of pride in, you know, humble beginnings. And I'm not sure how much that shaped you as you went along. But anyway, so you're born in Toronto. You're the fifth child out of six.
Yep.
In a crammed house. Obviously, though, surrounded by people who loved you, I think.
Well, always not much money, yeah. but a lot of love.
Yeah.
And that ultimately matters for a household if you can have folks and family who love you.
Yeah.
And does that shape you? Sure it does.
I think that if you look at one of the markers of success, and it's too bad because you can't go back and sort of fix parenting, but if you were lucky enough to grow up in a supportive household, as I was and as you were, it just gives you like this emotional stability right from the beginning. And I really feel for the people who haven't had that.
Well, you know, I'm not sure that there's any rules on how to be a great mm-hmm. parent or even a good parent or mm-hmm. a bad one. People just do the best that they can under their circumstances. Yeah. So I respect that. But from our standpoint, we were blessed that way. Interestingly, my father was a truck driver.
Mm-hmm.
He and everything that you do and everything that you've been shapes where you are today. So imagine this. Dad was a truck driver. Mom worked hard as hell inside the home with six kids. We were in Scarborough. Dad's career was what it was.
Yeah.
Career wasn't what he would have called it back then.
Well, he wanted to provide for his family.
And that's what he was. Yeah. And a great provider. And we never missed a meal. You might mm-hmm. be able to tell that. And from our standpoint, he was always looking to take care of his family. So they followed my mom's mom again, this time to California.
Oh, so you actually lived in California
5 years.
For a while. Wow.
And here I am, a kid finishing grade 5 in California, ending in grade 9. But you see, mom got super sick with cancer, and we had to sell our house because we had no insurance.
Yeah.
Very tough time. So my dad said, you know what? Let's go back to Canada, because if mom got sick again, at least there'd be, at this point, there was the national health care plan,
mm-hmm.
and mom would be okay, at least taken care of if something happened. So we moved back to Toronto. I did two high schools in Toronto. One was Riverdale Collegiate for grade 10, and then Malvern Collegiate in the Beaches area for grade mm-hmm. 11 to 13. Became president of that high school.
I want to pause you there, even though we're going to keep going on the journey here. So then you're already running for student council president.
Oh, but before then, I ran for grade 6 class president in California. Oh. And Julie, somebody whooped my ass.
So you had electoral defeats.
I already had electoral defeats.
So, but what is it? I mean, I just know you to be very gregarious, outgoing, good networker, very positive person, energizer. Is that something, like, when did that turn on for you as a child? Or was that just sort of your innate personality right from the beginning?
Well, I mentioned that my mom worked hard as hell inside mm-hmm. the home, but she was also a phenomenal volunteer.
Oh, okay.
So she collected money for the church, our Catholic church. She collected money for the Cancer Society.
Mm-hmm. So she was a canvasser too?
Like canvasser, door to door.
I remember doing some of that when I was younger. Yeah, canvasser.
And, you know, I'm at my mom's knee and...
So she would not rope you in, but she would include you into that.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You were voluntold. I got it.
Well, but of all the kids, I kind of absorbed that more than the others. And then she volunteered for politics. And that was because of her Cape Breton roots. Her father ran for the CCF nomination in Cape Breton Island. CCF ultimately became the NDP.
Yeah.
But he lost that election for reasons that will remain untold for the moment.
Enough, fair enough, yeah.
And she was so bitter at his loss that she became a liberal. And I was raised a Trudeau senior liberal right through to high school.
For the audience who doesn't know Ed, he served in the Stephen Harper conservative government, first as a minority government and then as a majority government and then as a minister. So this would be a big challenge. It's sort of like I grew up as a long-time conservative member of the Conservative Party. So, yeah. But what's interesting, and I think the audience will pick up on it, is this alchemy of all these ingredients, community service, a little bit of politics interest. They're all starting to form. It's almost like the forming of the earth and the lava is moving around and everything. And many of these things would inform your career later on, including insurance, like your mom not being insured and having a loss.
Hadn't thought of that. Yeah. I hadn't thought of that perspective because it's not that I desired to go into insurance as my career. And it ultimately became my business career, right. Insurance, the insurance industry and small business. But
even healthcare. I mean, you're mentioning that you relocated to Canada to get access to the public healthcare system.
Right.
So unlike some people said, yes, we have to defend public healthcare, your family lived as a benefit of that, which was important.
Well, they had a no choice option, frankly, because had mom got sick again, my dad didn't know what he would do.
Yeah.
So he went back actually to the same company as a truck driver that when he had left.
Yeah.
So I think it was 12, 13 years with the company in Toronto, the cement mixing company, and then went back for 17 years and retired with them.
Isn't that interesting? That goes back to you never burn any bridges because you just never know. So back to just this idea, aside from talking about some politics in the family earlier on, is were you just always generally outgoing? Did you ever switch and turn that on? How did that, even just the desire to be the student council president is not something many people would even crave?
Well, it's a fair question. See, my Cape Breton mom always said that community service is the price you pay to live somewhere.
Mm.
And I really absorbed that. So before we moved to California, I was in Cubs.
I was a Beaver and a Cub as well.
Yeah, well, I was a seconder and then a sixer.
Oh, yeah.
And here I am 10 years old, and I knew I was about to become senior sixer, and for some reason I really wanted it.
Yeah.
And instead we moved to California.
Oh, okay.
So then in California, the next stage is Weeblos.
Oh, I didn't know
for
that.
For those that might be aware of that. So I joined that, but I never went into full scouting.
Yeah.
My brother was a scout. My dad was active in their leadership somewhat.
Yeah, I also never went to the scouting level. I sort of ended with Cubs.
Yeah.
But you were already striving at that point.
Well, it seems.
Yeah.
Because it was funny because I'm trying to remember whether grade school, and we were selling these Margaret's Donut boxes.
Okay.
And turkey raffle tickets for a quarter, and you'd get a little paper coupon
stub,
with 10 attached.
Yeah.
And the way that most kids got rid of them is they said, Mom and Dad, give me $2.50 and
exactly.
I'll turn it in and that's my contribution. I think I sold 500 tickets.
Yeah.
And some kids were really annoyed that I got to draw the ticket. But anyway, they let me do that. So I was always encouraged, I would say, at a younger age. And funny enough, in California, from an education system standpoint, they really pushed you. So here I am, I come in halfway through grade 5 into California. And, of course, you have to join the music group. And the only thing that was left over was the string bass, which is the big tall.
Yeah, the big tall bass. Yeah.
And so my poor father on Friday nights would come with his sedan, roll down the window, we'd put the bass in, close it with the window down so that the neck could hang out. I'd practice the bass fiddle over the weekend, much to the chagrin of my folks, I'm sure, certainly my siblings. And then on Monday morning, he'd repeat the same process. Did that for 3 years for me.
So could you still strum the bass, do you think?
Well, strum is not what you would use. You either use a bow or
you're
pick.
Plucking, yeah.
Yeah, that's what you
do. So in my case, my parents thought it would be cool if I learned how to play the accordion, which, of course, at the time was, I would say, somewhat embarrassing. And when I tell the story in our training programs, I'll go, my revenge was they had to attend accordion recitals, which was not probably easy at the time. So now do I wish that I could still play the accordion? Yeah, actually, now it would be kind of cool to be able to bring it out and play it. But
and
at the time, it wasn't. No. I stopped it after a few years. I was young. Yeah. I played the trumpet in the band.
Do you play that
now? No. Well, I could. Like, there's a trumpet at my in-law's place, and I will get it out, and I can play it a little bit. But that's the one thing that I got a guitar and never really sort of followed through to learn the guitar. So I loved doing music when I was younger, and then it's just something I didn't continue
with. So let's be clear, you love owning instruments.
That's true.
That's it.
Well, Ed, I don't know about you, but if you could just buy something and then naturally know how to do it, that would explain all my Home Depot purchases.
Perfect. Well, when I was 11 for my birthday, my mom got me an electric guitar.
Oh.
And had to, because my hands at that time were fairly small.
Yeah.
And so,
is hard. People don't realize when you're learning guitar just how tough it is on your fingers initially to get those held down on the frets.
Well, she taught me three chords, and that's what I know today.
There you go.
But I'm pretty good
now
at
now you can be a Beatle. Right?
I could be,
So let me kind of.
But we digress.
No, that's okay. That's okay. I knew we would. So you're coming up. Let's go from graduating. So, sorry, where did you go to university?
Western.
Oh, Western. Right in London, Ontario. That's where I'm also a graduate from.
So you're purple and proud.
Yeah.
Good for you. So after high school, because what was interesting, end of grade 12. So I'm really giving you the painful background here, but I was accepted at Centennial College to go into business.
Okay.
So I went to the principal, and I had to tell him because I was high school president, and in those days it was half grade 12 term, half grade 13 term when they had a grade 13. And I had to say to Mr. Hogarth, I said, I'm leaving at the end of grade 12. And he said, why? And I said, well, I've been accepted at Centennial College for business. He said, you're not going. I said, I thought I was. He said, no. If you want to go into business and you're serious, you go to Western. I said, where's that? He said, London. Listen to this. I said, where's that?
And he said, you were a Torontonian at that point. Oh, now you're a diehard Londoner.
Yeah. And he said, 2 hours down the road. And he said, they've got a great business school. Funny thing is, I took Biz 20 at Western.
Yeah.
Didn't like it. Took Eck 20. Absolutely disappointed in my marks. Took philosophy.
Yeah.
Loved it.
Oh.
Had a barely passing mark in math in grade 13, got like an 82.
Yeah, yeah. That's when
year.
I decided I wouldn't be an engineer after grade 13 math.
but having said it, did fairly well in some of the esoteric subjects. Mm-hmm. And so that was my degree, was philosophy.
Okay. Did you do Biz 257 as well at Western? Yeah, that was the requisite for me to get into the HBA program. Is I got an acceptance based on if you get at least an 80 in Biz 257. I really enjoyed that course though as well.
Well, you know, I did not, because it's a teamwork
thing. It is.
And if you have a teamwork project, you presume you've got a team.
Yeah.
And I recall we had this pretty good idea. If I recall, it was to set up a camera shop at Western because they had nobody doing photography formally for grads and things like that. But I did a lot of the research, and it isn't about me, but I was somewhat frustrated that it felt like more of a one-man versus a team project. So in any event, I said enough of business, and I'd never go into business.
So what? Oh, interesting. Interesting when you say I'm never going to do that, and then you were the president of an insurance brokerage. What did you get your degree in then?
Philosophy.
Oh, neat. Neat.
So then I thought, well, what do you do with that?
Yeah.
So you can either go into insurance or politics, and I've done both.
Okay.
But at one point I thought I'd go into law because, you know, you've got a degree.
Yeah, a lot of philosophy goes into law.
So I wrote the LSAT and did exceptionally well.
Yeah.
But the challenge was, again, coming back to California where you take Spanish down there instead of French, and I came back to high school, they wouldn't let me take French because I didn't have it as a prerequisite in my...
So you had a gap, basically.
So I took German for 4 years.
Oh, wow.
And then after that, I went to Western and took baby French. But that matters in terms of how each step is another piece of the puzzle, because we wanted to do some kind of a field trip, and I can't recall in French 2 of all things, so that's not even first year French.
Yeah.
That's bonjour, ça va, that kind of thing. Yeah. So I
know in my case, I stopped taking French. I think it was, I did up to grade 10 or 11, and then when they started to, the class would be all taught in French, that's when I had to bail. Like the accordion, it is a bit of a regret, because I see, as you probably did in your political career, especially in Canada, it would have helped to be bilingual. And now, you know, in the other studio here, they're doing sessions in Spanish, and my colleague, you know, became fluent in Spanish, and it serves him very well. So. Yep. Yeah, the missing extra language, but I can do ein, zwei, drei, vier, fünf,
sechs.
That's it. That's about it, right, in German, and my dad was...
So du kannst nicht ein Deutsch sprechen, no? Okay.
No, no. So you come out with a philosophy degree.
Yes.
And then go into insurance?
Well, just before, because I wanted to go into law, but...
Oh, yeah, why didn't you go to law?
Well, I tried.
Yeah.
But in French too, and this is again part of the steps of the political stuff, I guess.
Yeah.
I want to find the Art Students Council at Western, because philosophies and French are arts.
Mm-hmm.
Department dean, the dean of arts was a pretty great guy. But I went to them, and he said, "You've got to go to the Art Students Council." There wasn't one. Mm-hmm. Went to the USC University Students Council, and they said, "Well, there hasn't been one for several years." So we created it.
Oh.
And I became president.
Of the Arts Students Council?
Absolutely.
At Western?
Oh. For the rest of my time at Western.
Okay.
And And it's kind of nice to be able to do that to, you know, there's no election, makes it easy.
Yeah. because you started it.
Yeah, because I started it.
Okay.
But all of a sudden we got funds from USC, the Dean of Arts gave us a study room, a little office at University College, and we created a mascot, team sports, we got the arts community there. And in fact, I was at the Keg restaurant with my wife not that long ago. And a young lady said, "You're Ed Holder." And I said, "Hello, who are you?" And she said, "Well, I am the president of the Art Students Council."
Oh, isn't that amazing?
And so I thought, wow,
many
years
later? I mean, you being recognized in London wouldn't be a big deal, but the fact that she knew that you had been at the president of the Art Students Council, the founder, essentially, was kind of cool.
So it was kind of fun. Yeah. So because of all that student activity, and it's not an excuse, but it's a bit pathetic, really, my marks were average, and you couldn't get into law with average marks, even though the LSAT was great. Yeah. So
that's one of the downsides, I think, of kids that want to aspire to medicine or any of the disciplines. Like, you have to be almost singularly focused on that from a very young age and get really into that track. And I mean, again, nothing against specialists. Specialists are needed. I just think that the generalists, you know, we kind of get cast aside a little bit.
Well, that's why after that didn't happen, it really leads to insurance. So I was taking a friend of mine back to New Jersey, a Canadian boy whose dad was an executive at the Prudential Insurance Company. And I took him home, and I was touting how great a golfer I was. And, and what I didn't realize is that his father was an actual golfer.
Oh, okay.
And I was fairly bad.
Yeah.
But he said to me, he said, "Why wouldn't you consider insurance?" Mm-hmm. And I said, "Bob, I didn't get a university degree to sell insurance." Yeah. And he said, "I don't sell insurance." Mm-hmm. And somehow I had this notion that it would be a not good thing.
Right.
How ridiculous of me. Yeah. So it was the first act of favoritism that had ever happened. Probably not the first, but the one I really recognized where he gave me a warm introduction into Prudential. I went to the appointment.
And this is Prudential in Canada, right?
Yeah, Prudential Insurance Company, The Rock.
Right, in the U.S.
U.S. company based.
But they had a
Canadian division at King & Young in Toronto, downtown. So I went back to Toronto, joined them. I was there 3 weeks, and the guy that I was hired to replace in research on the employee benefits side said, "Tell you what," to the manager. He went to Ryerson then for journalism, decided journalism wasn't his thing, came back, asked for his job. He was brilliant. They gave him the job back, but we were over budgeted by one person.
And that was you?
That was me.
Okay.
So the manager came to me and said, "Ed, we're over budget by one. I'd like you to post for the supervisory job."
Oh, wow.
And I said, "Bill, I've never been fired from a job in my life. So you know what? I understand. Just let me go quietly."
Yeah.
And he used a little bit of an expletive, and he said, post for the position. So I became a supervisor. But the great thing
after 3 weeks, they asked you, suggested that you post for the supervisor.
Well, it took about a month.
Yeah, but still.
Yeah, no.
It's early in your career.
I was so unqualified. But they gave you courses, and they really supported you. And I was just very honored.
I want the audience to know that getting courses when you're a supervisor is really helpful. And Ed is a testament of that.
Yep.
So
there you go.
All right. Good stuff. So you are with the Prudential. How long was it then before you went and started the
Ontario West? Well, there's a story to that, a quick one.
Yeah.
And that is, I went through several departments progressing through the head office of the Prudential. And I, for a while, I thought that was going to be my career. But then I noticed the guys that I was helping train, the sales guys, they all had great clothes, nice cars, and white teeth.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's what I want.
Okay.
So I went to the group department and a benefits department. I said, "Listen, I'd love to be in sales." And they said, "We don't need you. You've already trained. You've been training people to do that. We're all full up."
Mm-hmm.
Concurrently, this was the time, 1981, when my mortgage went from a normal then, 10.5%, normal, to 22.1.
So I just want to pause because, you know, we've just gone through this period where you could, it's funny because I can remember my parents' first mortgage in North London was one of those, I think it was a 25 or 30 year mortgage for 2 or 3%. And they said it would never happen again. Then we just went through a period where mortgages could be 2 to 3%. Now they're sort of 4 to 6%, depending on your term. And yeah, my first mortgage in 1991 was 10 3/4, and that was a discounted rate because my wife worked at the insurance company, so we got a discount. And that's why, you know, everything adjusts. But yeah, people forget that in the early 80s, there was a tremendous recession caused because of these high interest rates, which were to clamp down on inflation and, you know, basically slow the economy. And so you're right in the middle of it. So what else happened that steered you towards the brokerage business?
Well, what happened was because of my, and I lived, I had 4 acres up in Stouffville, Bloomington and 9th. Mm. Wished I had it today.
Yeah, that would have been worth a lot today.
And But I couldn't afford the renewal at 22.1%. So, and I couldn't get into sales. So again, serendipitously with that, I made a decision, moved back to London because I'd gone to Western. Yeah. That was my connection, where I could buy a house for cash for the difference between my mortgage and what I sold for. Right. And I moved to Old South.
So even just selling that property, though, at that time must have been a bit of a strain, or was it okay to sell the property in Toronto when the interest rates were really high?
Sold it to a couple from Alberta who thought they got a steal.
Okay.
So it was great for me.
Perfect.
But I came to London, and so that's a long way to get from Cape Breton and Holderville to London, but that's that's
all. By the way, I didn't ask you, and is Holderville because of the Holder family, or was it called Holderville and just by circumstance or coincidence that you were?
Well, is there anything called Schinkeltown anywhere?
No, well, there probably is in Germany. I know some of our ancient relatives or our old relatives are on buildings in Germany.
Well, but, Holderville is after our Holder family, and to call it a city is ridiculous, or a town. A village, no.
It was really just a big family.
A crossing is what it would. And there's the Holderville house there.
Okay.
So, and that's.
Still?
Yep. And it's owned by some family, some cousins. Right. So,
when I came. So you moved back to London.
And here was the problem, Greg. I didn't know anybody.
Mm. Ah, networking. If only you were good at networking.
If only. So I joined the Rotary Club of London,
because I thought that we were both members there, and both served as president there, although you did when it was much larger than when I did.
Well, interestingly, it was Rotary because of community service. Mm-hmm. I joined the Chamber of Commerce because I thought that would be good for business, and I joined the Old South Community Organization where I lived because my neighbor told me I had to.
Were you not also in a networking group? I forget if it was the Directors Club or something.
I started
like
the Directors Club.
Oh, okay. All right.
So I was part of a little networking club in Toronto called the Directors Club of Toronto, and I love the concept of it because it's people helping people. So when I came to London, I founded the Directors Club of London, which exists today.
Yeah.
So from 1981. And my friend Wayne Dunn is running that.
And you and Wayne, again, well, we haven't even touched on all the community work, but you and Wayne Dunn were instrumental in working together for the Business Cares Food Drive, I think, right?
Yep.
As far as raising for the food bank or getting donations to the food bank. But okay, so you're getting your roots into networking, which, again, It's hard for people to realize that before the internet, you know, the only time you'd meet people is to get together with them for breakfast or lunch. I mean, Ed came in today and was, Suzanne Jakes is our producer today, and he said, you know, he gave us the business card, which is awesome. And of course, my business cards, I have about 2,000 of them, but of course they're hidden at home in my cabinet. But Ed still hands out 1,000 to 1,500 business cards. So really believing in the power of connection. So, okay, so how does Ontario West get started then?
Well, coming to London, mm-hmm. I knew employee benefits. So I started Edwin A. Holder and Associates Insurance Agencies Limited. Oh,
okay.
My God, what
there
a mouthful.
There we go. That's a long corporate name.
Well, I changed it to Ontario West because a great friend of mine, my mentor in Stratford, Jack White, said, if you name a name after yourself, and you ever want to sell... It's really hard.
Actually, my dad's the same reason why he called our company Unique Training and Development was because you want it other than your own name.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I changed it to Ontario West Insurance Agencies Limited, mm-hmm. Bought a brokerage, got licensed, and also added Ontario West Insurance Brokers Limited, mm-hmm. because to operate property and casualty, house, auto, and commercial insurance, you needed to have your brokerage license different from your life license.
Yeah.
So I had the two agencies. One of my clients was a Telex timesharing company, TelExperts, and I bought their franchise for London region.
Telex. So I can remember my dad using the Telex machine At General Motors when I was at General Motors University in Michigan, and they still had telexes going on. Yep. It was about to be phased out.
Well, I can tell you that we also got into telex time sharing and fax time sharing.
Yeah, there you go. Fax machines, yeah. I mean, of course, again, it's so hard for people these days with unlimited minutes to remember the days of trying to call on a Sunday and keeping your conversations under, you know, 5 minutes, because although it was cheaper on Sundays to dial long distance,
yep.
I think it was 30 or 40 cents a minute even back, you know, 25 years ago to call some long distance.
So was your first phone one that got installed in your car?
I had a bag phone. I came in the bag phone era.
Okay.
I always thought car phones were cool. Did you actually have a car phone?
Oh, at one point? And it was big, and yeah. I think it was Motorola, if I'm not mistaken.
Mine was like a bag phone through Future Shop at the time, which was bought by Best Buy. But it's like, it was a bag phone, and I can't even think. Probably I've had more types of phones than types of cars, although I love buying both. But it's like, yeah, so it is amazing. So yeah, you had the car phone, but you're growing this insurance brokerage. What is it that caused, so how many years did you grow that, and then you sold it to Stevenson and Hunt to fold it in, and what was the reasoning for that?
Sold Ontario West Brokers first.
Mm-hmm. Oh, separately.
Separately, because it was two separate companies, because quite frankly, I didn't know enough about property casualty insurance at the time, mm-hmm. and we were losing our underwear.
Oh, okay.
And that wasn't helpful. Mm-hmm. But a great friend, Bill Boland, he's since passed away with Marshall Boland Insurance, mm-hmm. bought it. And the irony is, where politics comes back into it, we made a deal. Mm-hmm. And then he comes to me probably 3 weeks before provincial election, and he said, Ed, there's some talk that the NDP might win the election. I said, can't happen. Because at this point, I'm a conservative, active in the Conservative Party. Yeah. And he said, well, I agree.
So this is the Bob Rae wave? Is that what he was saying?
It became that.
Yeah.
But he said, if the NDP win, then I'm going to give you $25,000 less. And I said, well, it's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, it cost me $25,000. At the time, that's a lot of money. But in 1990...
See, kids, gambling never pays.
Gambling never pays. So in 1990...
The sure thing doesn't always happen.
In 1991... Stevenson Hunt approached me, and they said, we would like to buy your company. And being an arrogant little punk.
Now, again, you'd already sold off the Ontario West property and casualty.
That's right.
But then you still had...
The employee benefits, basically. Yeah. Little life insurance.
That's where Ed's focus has been, really, is in the employee benefits space. Which
that's
was
my
really,
background.
Yeah, which is really, again, selling to companies the benefits packages.
And that's always... I always found that better because it was daytime activity.
Yeah.
Because when you sell life insurance, which I've done, and it's an honorable thing, but there were a lot of kitchen table sales, and you'd be there up late, and your family becomes parentless, or at least dadless, while you're doing that. So the nice thing about benefits, it was daytime activity. So not knowing how huge Stevenson Hunt was, I cheekily said, no, why don't I just buy Stevenson and Hunt? And... But they were like 100 times bigger than me. I had no idea how large they were. So they said, well, you know.
So you're a small fish to them at that point, right, when they acquire you?
But when they did, the president of the company said, we didn't really want your business. We wanted you.
Ah.
So that was in 91.
Yeah.
And I
went
back.
Another recession area, right?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I've been through them all.
Yeah.
And so my parents, where am I going? They keep coming back into my mind, thinking of the recessions they lived through.
Yeah.
But the president of the company said, we really wanted you.
Okay.
And I was president in 1999.
Yeah.
So I was in sales, became a partner in 95, and then president. And I was picked president because I had my own company before. I had community involvement before.
Yeah.
So everything that you do in your previous lives really impacts on what you do today. And
it's by the way, the term I'll put on it is we're becoming career archaeologists here, because we're looking at those, we're uncovering the things that helped Ed. And again, because one of our mandates at the Accelerating Operational Performance podcast is really to help people in their career journey, I hope what people are picking up is that your career really becomes a tapestry. In fact, in one of our programs, we have something called the leadership journey, where you map your ups and downs in your career so that what did you learn? Because you learn from both.
Yep.
You learn from your wins and you learn from your losses. And it's fascinating when you start to dig in, because people always think, if my career isn't going in one direction the whole time up, But life never does that either. It has its ups and downs and its setbacks and hardships. And it's really all of that is just fuel for the future, right?
There's a great insurance company, McFarland's, in London.
Yeah,
and they used to have a billboard in the old days, and it showed somebody fishing, somebody with a briefcase, a nurse at work. Mm-hmm. And basically, the underlying caption is, for all the lives you lead.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Yeah, yeah.
And that really is, it's not just one thing. Yeah. It's the accumulation of all your experiences. And it's what you said about that tapestry. I think that's well said.
Yeah. So Stevenson and Hunt, so how long after you joined them was it before you became president of the company?
In 96, but the irony was...
So about 5 years.
So I'm getting settled into Stevenson Hunt, and I go to the president of the company, the newly...
By the way, I don't know how you describe the size of an insurance brokerage, because it's still a large business.
Yeah, renamed as Arthur J. Gallagher Insurance because they were corporately bought out after I sold my interest.
Yeah. But your question is, how big a firm was it?
Well, certainly the biggest regional independent firm in Southwest Ontario.
Yeah.
And they counted their commissions in the millions of dollars, just to give you a perspective. Yeah. But the number doesn't matter as much as it was massive.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a big business.
So I'm there just over a year, mm-hmm. and I go to the newly minted president, and I say, I've got good news and bad news.
Yeah.
And he said, well, what's the good news? And I said, I really like it here. He said, great, what's the bad news? He said, I'm going to run for federal parliament.
Mm-hmm.
This was in 1992, I told him.
Mm-hmm.
So he wasn't very excited about that.
No.
But he said, let me think on this. So he came back, and he said, you know, I'm not happy.
Mm-hmm.
However, you're going to do what you're going to do.
Yeah.
So if you win, maybe we'll keep you on the letterhead. We'll see.
Yeah.
If you lose, you get the Northern Run. And the Northern Run started at Parry Sound and went north.
I see. So there was a little consequence to this decision?
Great implications. Made me work harder. Still lost.
Ah.
So I got the Northern Run.
Oh, my. Yes. So, again, I just think you just won everything. But, no, you actually didn't win that
nope.
election.
No. Nope.
And, therefore, paid the consequence of sort of having the less desirable route to look
at. But it actually became the benefit because nobody was doing the Northern Run.
Yeah, so
and
it's like, isn't that the story of Bada when he went to, you know, Africa and said, or is his researchers and said, bad news, no one has any shoes. And he goes, good news, no one has any shoes.
Oh, well, 100% right. And I went into, we did a lot of public sector, like hospitals and nursing homes and
so you people, picked up some good business.
People
up there.
Were just glad to see you.
Yeah.
And that's the reason I became a shareholder, because all of a sudden
your book really grew then, right?
Incredibly so.
Okay.
And when they decided to pick as part of their change management, and a couple of partners had retired, they decided to pick two property and casualty guys and mm-hmm. two employee benefits guys as the new partnership with some of the veterans.
So, by the way, this is a great, like, turning lemons into lemonade story, right? So, again, sometimes, you know, in career management and development, they often say, you know, if you pick the right assignment, it sets you up for success. It's just good career management. In other words, you don't really want to, you know, take charge of a sinking ship. But there's an example where Ed's got this adversity, essentially, of being given this territory that had very low expectations and no one else really wanted, turns it around, makes it into a partnership play, just from being successful at it. So again, I think people try to handicap what's going to happen ahead of time, and you don't always know, but you can always choose to make the most out of whatever it is that you have in front of you.
So then with that, Greg, I became a partner in 96 and mm-hmm. president in 99.
Okay.
And again, for the background reasons that we just talked about, that those things just developed. And as president, what was exciting is we went on an acquisition mode.
Okay.
We tripled the size of our company in the 9 years I was there with my partners and with an incredible team. We had about 40, 45 employees when I became president, ended up with about 150.
Okay.
So quite exceptional.
Sizable office.
Because we had great people that worked with us.
So now, you know, one of the questions that I asked is, one of the questions I gave you in advance was really this, so you decide at some point to exit the business. Was that also coinciding with running again for politics? I was trying to remember like how things transpired. When did you exit Stevenson and Hunt, and was it in conjunction with running and winning in the election?
Well, you can't presume you're going to win.
No.
But on the other hand, the two did go hand in hand.
Okay.
So here we are, 2008.
Yeah.
And, you know, one thing in life, whether it's in business, politics, or anything else, you never want to get past your best before date. Trouble is you don't know when that is.
Yeah.
But I was getting a sense that that having spent 33 years in the insurance industry, that I'd had a pretty good run of it.
Yeah.
And at the same time, politics was always a passion.
Yeah.
From as a young kid right through to I never lost it. So I went to the partners and I made the decision and I said, I'm going to step away. The election is October 2008. I think I let them know in the early summer. And they were great about it because they wanted to buy my shares and go on from there. Yeah. And they were happy with that as an arrangement. But I was happy as well. And then I had a nomination to win. And I ran against Wayne Gretzky's uncle, who
was the
prior candidate.
Yeah. Oh, and I'm going to do? I'm going to pause the story of the politics because this is a great transition. And what we've got is there's so much gold here with Ed. What I'm going to do is we're going to have a part two to our podcast episode. So first of all, let me just wrap this up to say we've been talking with Ed Holder. You can Google Ed Holder and you'll definitely find him on the internet. And in part two, we're going to really look at this transition into politics, both at the federal level, but also at the municipal level. And then, yeah, he's a consultant as well. And I think what you've probably gotten so far in our interview is just how cool it is, the journey that people go on. And I'm hoping that you'll find this really interesting. And so join us for part two. Of course, if you need to talk to us about our Frontline Leadership Program or our new Plant Manager Excellence Program, the easiest way is to start a conversation with us at our website at uniquedevelopment.com. Until then, all the best on your leadership journey.